Yeah. That Baez would have been my guy if I had gone first, but I am a masochist and don't allow myself to go first ever. Episode 75 of Flags Fly Forever, Baseball Prospectus Fantasy Podcast. I am your host, Brett Sayer, and with me, as always, is Mike Ginella and George Bissell. How are you guys doing on yet another Monday night? This time of second base week. Exciting week.
Yeah, it really is. We got away from catchers, and now we're going to actually talk about some players that are pretty good.
You guys recovered from the snowstorm down there?
No, I don't want to talk about it.
Yeah, I pretty much got just enough of my driveway cleared so that if I have to get the car out, I will. But I'm going to work from home tomorrow.
So we will, as I mentioned before, we have second baseman to cover this week. So before we drop into those yummy second baseman, we will go through our housekeeping. You can read us at baseballperspectus.com. You can find us on Twitter. I am at Dynasty Guru. Mike is at Mike Gianella. That's G-I-A-N-E-L-L-A. George is at George Bissell. It's two S's and two L's. You can email us at flagsflyforever at baseballperspectus.com. You can rate and review us on iTunes. The more of those we get, the better we feel and the more people can find our show. So you should do that. So we will take a quick break and then we will answer a reader email as I'm talking about the email address, but we'll be right back. And we are back. So before we get into second baseman, we have a email that came in from David that has a little current event tinge to it. His question is, does Michael Conforto's at-bats drop now due to the Mets' re-signing of great chain-smoking Cuban outfielder Yoenis Cespedes? Does Cespedes play center field full-time? Does Conforto get removed for defense in the seventh or eighth? What does the Mets' batting order look like now, and what effect does it have over runs and RBI? So, Mike, I will kick this out to you. What's your 30-second impression of what the Cespedes signing does to Michael Conforto's 2016 value?
He probably loses some at bats. You know, I would have to think that, you know, Conforto is going to play against some lefties, but they're going to try to rotate Juan Lacaras and Alejandro Daaza in there. It gives them some flexibility. I would say, as opposed to a full season of 550, 600 at bats, you're probably looking more like 450 to 500.
Sounds good. Well, while we're on the subject, so what do you think is a reasonable line, and where do you think he hits in the lineup when he plays?
He'll probably hit, like, I'd say fifth or sixth. I don't really have a line. I actually was just putting my NL only bids together for NL only. I think I had him at about 18. I probably would have had him at about 20 or 21 if they hadn't signed Cespedes. So, you know, that's kind of where I see it. You know, it knocks him down maybe 10% of his value, but he really should still be a pretty solid guy. But he's also not going to hit the way he hit, you know, when he kind of came up with the Mets and lit the world on fire those first couple months. I think there'll be just a little bit of slippage.
That makes sense. Yeah, I'm with you on that. I wouldn't be surprised if he hit a little bit lower down in the lineup, even with Daniel Murphy being gone, I could still see him hovering sixth or seventh for a little while. I mean, their lineup is pretty deep. It really depends where Neil Walker slots in.
Well, I could see a scenario where Walker hits ahead of him, you know, when it's a lefty, and Conforto hit, you know, and Walker flip flop when it's a righty.
Yeah, it's possible. So yeah, thank you for emailing in, David. And if anyone else has questions, it's flagsflyforever@baseballprospectus.com. Now let's get into second baseman. As we have done, we are going to look through our 2015 valuations really quick first, just to see what interesting things we pick out from there, and then we're going to move on. So we'll start with the American League again. This year we had another huge year from Jose Altuve, but not quite the huge year that he had in 2014. Mike, is this enough? Was there enough of a drop in his valuation from 2014 to 2015 to make you think there's going to be another drop to 2016, or do you think 2015 was sort of his talent level?
I think both. I think he's capable of doing what he did in 2015. You know, he had a little bit more power. The steals leveled off, which I would have expected. The average dropped. You know, it was hard to expect him at about 340 again, but 313, which is what he did, is pretty good. You know, that being said, I think he could slip a little bit more. You know, I could envision a season where he only hits 10 home runs and, you know, he only hits 300. But there's just not that much far for him to go down. We've kind of seen this from him now for 2 years. I think Altuve's baseline kind of on the bottom end and only is a legit $30 player. You know, he's really good.
Yeah. The one thing I found interesting here is that he stole 38 bases, and among any other qualifying second baseman in the American League, the next highest stolen base total was 12. If you're in an AL only league, that obviously makes a huge difference. But is it possible to overstate that the difference that makes?
No, and in only leagues in particular, I don't think you can, because you know I went through this. I think there were 7 guys who stole, I don't know if it was 30 or more, or 35 or more, I don't have it in front of me, but just there aren't that many people running, or there aren't that many big-time base-stealing threats at this point. So even in a mixed league, you have to look at that. But if you're in an only league, you really can't get too – you really can't underestimate, you know, what these guys mean to your team.
Yeah. George, do you have any guys that jump out to you here on this list in the American League?
I think Brian Dozier scares me a little bit here in $22, but his speed really dropped off last year. He kind of struggled in the second half, and I think people still see him as a guy who can go 20-20, and while he might be able to do that, I worry a little bit here as he ages how his profile is going to work. The power was nice, obviously, the 28 home runs, but I worry about the impact that speed's going to have on his overall value, because as Mike mentioned, you know, the recurring theme, whether it's Mike's valuation series or the category breakdown series we did here at BP, you know, speed is just on the decline league-wide, and Mike, you hit the nail on the head. It was 7 hitters who stole 30 or more bases last year, and of those 7, all of them earned more than $20 in standard mixed leagues, and only 2 earn less than 30. So those elite speed guys like Altuve are just worth so much. And we're probably going to get into it later, but there's an argument to be made for those guys to be taken in the first round of leagues.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a fair point on Dozier, but it's kind of picking nets, right? When you have a guy that hit 28 home runs and scored over 100 runs, right? He only stole 12 bases. Really?
It is. I just worry about the speed. When you look at guys as they age, I mean, you can't count on big stolen base totals anymore. So I'd be a little concerned about that. We saw it with a guy like Ben Zobrist, where his speed just really tailed off as he hit his 30s. So just something to be aware of with him, I guess.
Yep. So we'll get into Dozier when we get into there. But yeah. Mike, anyone else jump out at you on the AL side?
I think Altuve is really the big guy. You know, the other one, I'm, you know, we mentioned Dozier. I'm kind of interested to see if Jason Kipnis can get back some of that speed, because, you know, he was solid last year, but he surprisingly didn't really offer a ton in power or speed. So he's the other guy that kind of jumps out at me in the AL as someone I kind of want to see what he does this year.
Mm-hmm. Sounds good. So let's move on to the NL, and it was a very similar story in the NL with a speed and average guy dominating the top of the position. This time it was D. Gordon. Mike, talk about D. Gordon. Where does this leave your head at with him? He earned $41 this year. I don't remember off the top of my head how much he earned in 2014, but
it was 34.
I was going to say you probably know off the top of your head. Same question with Altuve, except Gordon is trending upwards. Is 2015 his true talent level, or is paying for him in 2016 going to get weird for you?
It gets weird just because I think, you know, as much as I'm touting paying for these guys, it's really difficult for somebody to do what Gordon did and clear $40 2 years in a row. You know, in an only league, I think you still want to pay in the low 30s, but you have to build in a little bit of regression into the batting average. You know, the one thing I'll say is, you know, Gordon, you know, even if he only hits 290, there might be some more runs built into him with a, you know, better year from Christian Yelich or a full year of Giancarlo Stanton. You have to kind of keep that in mind. But I do think you want to be careful. You know, I know, Brett, you were cautious last year on D. Gordon. I like him better than you do, but, you know, I don't think you can just take this value and extrapolate him into being like a top five guy. I think that's probably a little bit aggressive. And I know people aren't doing that, but I don't want people listening to kind of look at my values and just say, you know, yeah, I'm going to pay like, you know, this premium price for him.
So it does, another similar question. Does the fact that there were more steals at the position in the NL make it less of a good idea to pony up for what Gordon is likely to cost?
No, just because I think Gordon, unlike the other two guys who stole over 20, you know, Brandon Phillips stole 23, but it almost came out of nowhere, and I think he's, what, 35 years old. I'm just a little scared that that's repeatable. And, you know, there's also the trade possibility with him if the Reds move him. And DJ LeMahieu, you know, I know he was he also stole 23, and I think he's capable of it. But I could see him stealing, like, say, 15 or to 17 next year. So, you know, no, I think Gordon, because of all the steals that he provides, is still a unique talent. And, you know, it's even if Gordon drops off and steals, you know, what are you looking at, 45? Where's his floor? You know, it's probably not below 40.
55.
Yeah, it's a high floor. But, you know, it really comes down to the batting average. I mean,
right. Well, unlike Altuve, I mean, pretty much, you know, you have the batting average, and you know, that's all Gordon does. I mean, he's going to hit like four or five home runs. He's not going to be a big power source.
Yep. That is true. So, George, anything with the other National League hitters that jump out to you in these valuations?
Yeah, we talked a little bit about Daniel Murphy when he signed with the Nationals. But I think he's a guy who could easily be second in the valuations for 2016. When you look at what he did last year, earning $17 with two stolen bases, you mentioned it, Brett, but Dusty Baker, he kind of likes to turn guys loose, and we could see a bit of a rebound. He dealt with, I think it was a quad injury that really sapped his speed. He didn't run at all last year, but the previous 3 years he'd stolen double-digit bases, including 23 in 2013. So there is some speed upside there with Murphy, and if the Nationals decide to let him run a little bit, I think he could easily be the second guy on this list, because I don't know how great I feel about Brandon Phillips repeating that stolen base total. Or I think Murphy could easily be the number two guy in the NL. That's unless Anthony Rendon gets back to being Rendon.
Rendon would be the guy, I think, yeah. if he's back.
But it wouldn't shock me to see Murphy be right there.
Well, Murphy could be three, but I think some of it is you got a bunch of guys here with Murphy, with Neil Walker, with Phillips, with LeMahieu. I think almost any of those guys could be three. There's just a lot of guys kind of in that clump in the NL.
That's true. It's a clumpy group, and it's a good group.
it's a clumpy
group. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So before I use any other similarly horrific words, let's move on to just the overall position in 2016 before we start talking about the tiers. Where I mean, we know who the names are going to be that are going to go early. How deep does the position feel to you, Mike? And how, I guess, two-part question. One, how comfortable are you if you don't get one of the top options waiting around for one of these other players? And two, what is the likelihood when you compare second base depth to shortstop depth that you're going to end up rostering two second basemen in a mixed league to fill your middle infield spot?
Well, to the first part of that question, you know, this is format dependent. I think if you're in a mixed league, I'd say a 14 team mix, I think second base looks decent. And, you know, a lot of people look at second base and say it's weak, but it's pretty comparable to third base, which is often viewed as a stronger position. So I think there's a comfort level there. Now, the second part of this question, shortstop, particularly when you factor in a lot of the National League shortstops, you know, after you get past Carlos Correa, is surprisingly thin. And I have a feeling that you're going to be better off with two second basemen, you know, particularly for that third middle infielder, you know, than shortstop. When you kind of start to weigh down at the position, particularly in a 15-team mixed league, and you see some of the options that are there, a lot of those guys are there for their glove, or they don't really have, to use your term, Brett, they don't really have a carrying tool, and they're not somebody, they might be a good player, and they might put up, say, you know, 8 home runs, 8 steals, but in a 15-team mix, you know, that's just kind of a weak thing to have for your third middle infielder. So I have a feeling you're going to be better off, you know, generally speaking, it depends on your draft or auction, but you're going to be better off pushing for a second baseman here.
Mm-hmm. George, is that your general sense as well?
Yeah, I think especially when you look at lower in the position, I think some of the names are a little bit more intriguing. If you look at the back half of the top 15, there's guys like Josh Harrison, Brett Laurie, Neil Walker. In terms of ADP right now, I know it's still early ADP data, but Jonathan Scope, Howie Kendrick, Javier Baez, there are guys with that I think are just more interesting at the back end of this list than at some of the other infield positions. So, yeah, I absolutely could see going with two second basemen to fill those spots. But like Mike said, it's going to depend on your league format more than anything. But I do like the back half of the list when you look at the rankings for second basemen.
All right. Well, let's start the list for second basemen so we can get into that back half that you want to talk about. We start with the 5-star tier. These are Mike's rankings that are up at Baseball Prospectus right now. The two names that are there are the two names that we've really discussed already, Altuve and Gordon. So, you know, what, George, actually, you just did the ADP analysis. What's the difference between Altuve and Gordon and where they're going compared to each other right now? Although, admittedly, it's early.
Yeah, so the ADP article, it's up right now at Baseball Prospectus, and I use the NFBC data. So it's 15-team leagues. So Jose Altuve right now is going on average with the 11th pick, which puts him in the first round, and D. Gordon's going with the 19th pick. So that's early in the second round of 15-team leagues. What's interesting to me about where Altuve's going is he's going ahead of guys like Scherzer, McCutchen, Pollock, Miguel Cabrera, Mookie Betts. But if you look at, from purely evaluation standpoint at just the raw numbers, he deserves to go ahead of those guys. And it just looks a little bit unconventional to say I'm going to invest in Jose Altuve in the first round and build my team around a speed-only guy. It seems like such a risky foundation to build upon, but it's really not when you look at the numbers the last two seasons. And he might have one of the highest floors of anybody in the first two rounds. So it's certainly justifiable. But right now, Altuve is going in the first, and Gordon's going a little bit later. And I think the better value is actually Altuve because there's a lot more risk, I think, with Gordon in some of the things we brought up, like the batting average and stolen bases going forward.
Yeah, I mean, you certainly can make the argument at this point that Altuve is not a speed-only guy. At least that's the big difference between him and Gordon, right? So where's Gordon going if Altuve is going at 11?
Yeah, well, Gordon right now is going 19th, so that's at the start of the second round. I think what I meant more was that a lot of Altuve's value is built on the speed and what he gives you there at the position. But, yeah, Gordon's going a little bit later right now, so he's an early second-round pick in 15-team leagues.
Mm-hmm. So, Mike, if that is sort of the proposition that we're looking at right now, does that make one more attractive versus the other, if that's going to be sort of the difference between where they're being taken?
You know, it's funny because on the surface, it looks like the guy you want is Altuve because of power. But on the other hand, I'm not sure how much of that power is going to come back. And that's really the interesting question with Altuve. If you believe that Altuve is a 15 home run guy, even if he's not going to steal 45, 50 bases, I think you want Altuve. But if you look at Altuve and think, well, you know, 10 home runs, maybe 11 is more realistic, that's not a big gap between him and Gordon. Gordon hit 4 last year. And I think even assuming a little bit of a slip for Gordon, say he hits like 310 or 315, those steals are legit. And I think the speed is legit. And I know it's only 8 slots, but I think given the difference, I think I want Gordon. I also think there's going to be some drafts. You know, we've seen this, Brett, in some of our drafts where people still aren't valuing speed properly. I could see Gordon slipping into the 20s, and at that point, it's really hard to kind of avoid him, you know, given that he can win you or give you a big chunk of a category all by himself.
Yeah. No, that is a very fair comment.
Yeah, well, and it's not the Billy Hamilton either, where he's going to give you a category and hurt you in, you know, a couple other places.
Yeah.
But we'll get to that when we get to outfielders.
Oh, I'm excited.
We will definitely get to that. So the four-star tier is a heavy-hitting tier with star power names, but, you know, all of them sit behind the two speedsters at the top. The guy who I think people are going to have the most difficult time valuing going into 2016 is the guy you have at the top of this tier, Mike, and that's Robinson Cano. What do you think we can reasonably expect from Cano in 2016? And do you think there are enough people pulling the ejector button on Cano that will make him a pretty decent value?
I think yes. And, you know, George, you did the ADP analysis, so you probably saw this and are more up to date than I am. But I think Cano, after being a little bit overvalued last year and people not, you know, recognizing that all the power wasn't coming back, he's going, I think, 53rd overall in ADP. Is that right, George? I know it was around there the last time I looked.
Yep, right around there, yeah. Just outside the top 50. So that's right around the fourth round.
Yeah, so it's the middle of the fourth round. And, you know, it's funny. I think that Cano was overvalued. Now I think he's undervalued. I could see him, you know, returning late second round, early third round value. He had 15 home runs in the second half. There were a couple of things that, you know, some people don't know about. He had a gastrointestinal issue that wasn't diagnosed early on. He was kind of struggling with that. He also lost a grandparent that he was very close to. He actually said he considered him a father figure. You know, that second thing's kind of tough because you can't really analyze it. But, you know, we do know that, you know, sometimes that affects players and, you know, really impacts their game. I don't think you can extrapolate his second half and his 15 home runs and say he's going to hit 30. But I could see him, you know, hitting kind of what he did last year, like 20 home runs, maybe 25, but with a better batting average. So, yeah, I think there's some bounce back in Cano. You want to be careful. You know, he doesn't belong in the five-star tier, as I said. I don't think he's going to get there. But I could easily see him being at the top of this tier if he delivers on the performance he's capable of delivering.
Sounds good. So let's talk about the other big swing name here, and that's Anthony Rendon. We kind of mentioned him a little bit before, and I wrote about him as my player to target in our players to target piece that came out on Monday. Did you, Mike? I put, you know, I have been very pro Rendon for a very long time, and to the point where I can be considered a borderline Rendon apologist here. Do you think that my view, sort of excusing his 2015 season, is valid, or do you think it's too shiny?
It's probably a little too shiny. I'm somewhere in the middle. He's going to do better. I don't think anybody doubts that. What's really hard to gauge is, you know, what those numbers are going to look like. But it's going to just go all the way back to 2014. Or if there's going to be some slippage. You know, my guess is there's going to be a little bit of slippage. And the one thing I think you might not see because of the injuries is the stolen bases that he put up. And I think if those stolen bases slip, you know, if he only steals, like, say, 3 to 5, he'll lose, like, you know, maybe $2-3 of value. I do know that there's some people out there in the industry besides you who like him. I know Steve Gardner at USA Today, you know, friend of the show, is really high on him as well. So there's some, you know, really smart people in you and Steve that really see the full bounce back. And he could very well be the guy ahead of Cano. And I think even more so than Cano, if Rendon is on, he could get to that 5-star tier. As far as a bet in drafts, though, I'm kind of in the middle. I'm kind of thinking, well, bet on the bounce back, you know, bet on him being firmly in this tier, but don't go crazy. And it sounds like you're definitely a little more aggressive on him than I am.
Yeah, I think it's probably safe to say that I'll be a little bit more aggressive. But I think that, you know, I think when you have a player with such a down season as Rendon has, and like he did, you want to look for reasons why he had that down season. And with Rendon, I think there is enough. There's enough there. The spring training injury, the follow up injury, the fact that he was, you know, he was playing hurt for part of the season. That may always be an issue with him because he does have a propensity to get hurt. But I think there's enough there for him to be. For him to be going in the top 50 in drafts with the idea that he can get back to that range. And, you know, considering he was being taken, you know, borderline late first round last year, I think that is a enough of a discount to make it worth it. So let's jump to we talked a little bit about Brian Dozier and his lack of steals, or at least as far as George is concerned. Where, George, I'll go back to you on this. Where do you place Dozier's batting average? If you are buying Dozier to play second base, what is your expectation for his batting average?
I think he's a career 240 hitter, so I'd be hesitant to go anything more than 250. I really would.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he walked less last year. That's a concern. There's just a few minor red flags. I know it's picking nits, so to speak, but, you know, nitpicking. But there are some things that are a little concerning with Dozier. And he was one of only 2 second basemen to hit more than 20 home runs. So that's where the value is. I think the power is there. But the slide in the second half and then just some of the things like the speed and the plate approach that I just think are a little bit concerning. He's still a top 5-10 second baseman, no doubt, but as he continues to age, I don't know how well his profile is going to play.
How much, well, you say that as he ages, how much of a concern is that for 2016?
It's not really. It's not a huge concern. The one thing he does, he pulls the ball a lot. I know he pops up quite a bit. That's the real reason for the low batting averages. So he's more of a pull hitter than anything. So I don't think it's a huge concern for 2016. I think the power, I think you can still bank on 20 home runs. I don't think he's going to get to 28. I'd be kind of surprised, but 20 to 25 wouldn't shock me. 10 stolen bases and a 240 average. I think you can put that in the bank. I'd pay for that. And right now he's going right around pick 70 in the fifth round of ADP. So that's not terrible. I can get on board there.
Fair enough. Dozier's used to being overshadowed. He was taken in the eighth round of the 2009 draft, and you would think someone who has been as successful as Brian Dozier, who was selected in the eighth round of the 2009 draft, would be the star of the eighth round of the 2009 draft. But do you know who was taken six picks ahead of him?
Anybody? 2009?
I'm terrible at this, so I'm
eighth round 2009 draft.
Without looking it up.
Oh, God. No idea. Alan Arenado? I don't know.
No, it was a maybe corner outfielder with some questionable bat speed.
Oh, boy. You've really stumped me.
That would be Mr. Paul Goldschmidt.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Taking six picks ahead of him.
Forgot about him in the outfield, too.
I don't think he ever really played outfield as a pro, but they... And now I'm looking this up because I'm...
Well, people were skeptical about Goldschmidt, too, right? And even his first, half season in Arizona, people were kind of like, yeah, he was great in the minors, but it's the PCL. Let's see what he does.
Yep. He played one game in center field in the Pioneer League and then the rest in first base as a pro. I was slightly wrong about that.
I guess they saw that and had enough.
Yeah, I think so.
Can you imagine what that looked like given his size?
That's true. Now I want to see if that was his first game of the year. It was not. It was right smack in the middle of the season.
There has to be video of this somewhere.
That's not the Pioneer League video that I want to see. The Pioneer League video I want to see is the video of Billy Butler pitching in the Pioneer League in 2001, I believe. He threw four innings in the Pioneer League. That is what I want to see.
Mike, I understand he's lost some weight. Isn't that right?
Best shape of his life, yeah.
Everyone's in the best shape of his life, except me, after shoveling 30 inches.
Was that Susan Slusser who tweeted that about his diet? I don't remember.
Yeah, it's now a well-balanced breakfast, right?
Oh, yeah, that's what I said. It's a well-balanced breakfast instead of country breakfast.
That's a shame. Country breakfast is so good.
It really is.
All right, so unless either of you has anything particularly enlightening to say about Ian Kinsler, we can move on. I think Kinsler is a get what you pay for kind of thing.
He is what he is.
He's going to score 100 runs this year.
Yeah, there's really not much ceiling or downside really to Kinsler.
Nope.
Cool. So now the three-star tier, which is, shall I say, clumpy? Clumpy. We have 11 names here, and this is where you're gonna start to draw some of these players into a middle infield slot. I'll throw it to Mike. Let's talk about your value pick for this tier and what you think his new environment can do for him.
Well, I think some of it's the environment. He's Brett Lowry's moving from Oakland, which is one of the harder parks for a hitter, into the cell in Chicago, and it's a park that it's not necessarily a great hitter's park, but it's a pretty good power park, and I could see Lowry bumping up a little bit in home runs. I don't want to overstate it, but I could see him hitting 20 home runs or getting close to it. But I think the more important thing with Lowry and we forget this a lot with players like Lowry. Lowry for years was overhyped, and he was kind of presented. I don't know if you remember. I talk about this every year when he comes up. He was drafted in only leagues at close to $30. People were paying him off of that one, like I think it was like 150 at bats or so in Milwaukee, and just paying him a ridiculous amount of money. And he just never earned it. I don't think he's ever going to be that guy who's like close to a $30 earner. But he isn't even, I think he's what, 26 years old? He isn't even really quite in his prime yet. John Benson years ago, one of the old fantasy gurus, he had something called age 26 with experience. And that's where Lowry is now. He's at that point where he's finally kind of reached the point in his career where I think you could still see a little bit of growth. And it's at the point where nobody's expecting it. He's still got a lot of talent. He's still a really good player. I just could see him kind of surpassing a lot of the other guys in this tier.
Mike, are you concerned at all about the ground ball rate, though? Because he's been above 47% in four straight seasons.
I'm a little bit concerned about that. And I think that's where you're not going to see him hit, you know, the 25 to 30 home runs that some people were expecting. There certainly is a limit to what he can do.
Yeah, but that being said, you're exactly right, because the Cell, it's the third best park in the American League for right-handed power hitters right now. So according to our park factors at BP. So
yeah, I wasn't sure if it was second or third without looking. So yeah, that's thanks for the info.
It's a much better environment than Oakland, put it that way. But yeah,
certainly.
A few more fly balls and 20 home runs is there.
Yeah. Speaking of 20 home runs, is it fair to say that the player in this tier with the best chance of getting the 20 home runs this year is Jonathan Scope, George?
I'd say absolutely, because he almost did it last year. He's kind of odd because he's just sort of like a free swinger. He actually hit for a decent average last year, which was surprising. I wouldn't count on him for anything more than power. He doesn't really run all that well, but there's kind of a lot to like with him, I think. And right now he's going outside the top 250 in terms of ADP, so that's the 17th round in 15-team leagues. So I think absolutely he's a guy to target. He only got 321 plate appearances last year because he got hurt, but he had 15 home runs. I don't think the average, he hit 279, but the previous season he hit 209. So I don't know if he's going to be anywhere close to 280, but the power is real, and he's only going to be 24 this year. He's a really nice value when you look at where guys are going and the real tangible upside.
Yeah, I think you got to give a hat tip to JP Breen here, because I had him ranked in the two-star, and when we were putting these together, JP kind of mentioned, oh, he should be a three-star, and I was a little skeptical, but then I went back and looked, and you know, I did realize that even if the average drops, yeah, Scope in that park could hit 20-25. It's not hard to envision at all, and I would definitely agree, George, that he right now he's being underdrafted.
Mm-hmm. So let's now talk about Mets second baseman past and future, or present, past and present. Daniel Murphy has moved on to Washington, and the Mets have replaced him with Neil Walker coming over from Pittsburgh. Now, both of them have, you know, they have slightly similar, disbalanced valuations, but they've roughly been equivalent over the past 3 to 4 years. What do we expect from both of them this year, and what makes you put Walker ahead of Murphy on this list?
I think the reason that I would go with Walker ahead of Murphy, now keep in mind, this is a very tight clump, and I think in NL only I have Walker ahead of Murphy by $1. So you're not talking about a significant difference. It's more just that, and I mentioned this up front, you know, so many of these guys are similar. But I think I have Walker a little bit ahead just because he hit over 20 home runs 2 years ago. You know, it's the one situation where, you know, moving to Citi Field is kind of rough for hitters, but he's moving out of PNC. It's a good move for him. I could see the uptick. And, you know, Murphy, I've got really nothing against him, but he's a streaky hitter. We've just kind of seen this before. I do agree with George that some of those steals could come back, and I think I mentioned this not in the tier article but somewhere else, that even if the steals come back for Murphy, he could gain, you know, even the 2014 level where he's still 11, he could gain $3 in value. But I kind of give Walker the edge just because I like him in that lineup a little bit better, particularly the revamp lineup that the Mets have now with Cespedes. I could see some more RBI opportunities. The Nationals still are very solid, you know, and it's funny, you know, when it comes to Mets and Nationals, I think people now have gone too far the other way and are really underestimating that the Nationals and Mets should be competitive all year. But that being said, I give Walker the edge because of the two lineups right now. I think the Mets lineup is actually deeper. You know, I look at the Nationals and I still see a couple of, I don't want to say holes, but I see a couple of guys that are a little bit weaker, a little bit softer, and I think that'll impact Murphy enough in runs and runs batted in that I give Walker the edge.
Yeah, I really like both of them for 2016. I think, you know, George, you touched on it before, and I guess you were talking about when I touched on it even before then. But Daniel Murphy, the key to Daniel Murphy's success in 2016 from a fantasy standpoint is going to be how much Dusty Baker lets him run. He is not, from watching Daniel Murphy play for the Mets for a while, Murphy is not what you would call an instinctual baseball player.
Let's not talk about his defense, please.
I'm not talking about just defense. I'm talking about general baseball instincts. He's talented, but he's not instinctual. And, you know, I think some of that plays out in his ability to steal bases. And, you know, he had the 1 year in 2013, sorry, where he stole 23 bases. He's been generally in the he stole double digits the year before that and the year after that, and then if you go back out another 2 years to the year before that and this year, he stole as many bases as he was caught. So that 1 year feels like the outlier, and we know Terry Collins was not a huge advocate of running guys on bases, but if those two steals become 12 again, then, you know, Murphy has a fair shot to be a four-star second baseman. And likewise, if Walker has his power tick up a little bit, and, you know, Citi Field, for its reputation, is a better place for left-handed power than PNC. He hit 23 home runs in 2014. He's hit 16 in each of the other years surrounding that. If he gets to 20 home runs, he's going to do enough in counting stats, and, you know, he probably will not steal more than a handful of bases, but a 270-ish average with 20 home runs might be good enough to sneak him up to the four-star tier also. So while I like them both, I think Murphy's got a little bit more upside, and Walker has a little bit more safety, if that makes sense to you guys.
Yeah, the only thing I'd add to that is, you know, Murphy's certainly not old, but to your point, Brett, he's not like a guy you look at and think athleticism. And it's not the hugest contract that he has with the Nationals, but he's making about 12-13 million a year. I think it's like a little over 12. You know, they might just kind of like look at those extra 10 steals he could get, and I don't want to say put the brakes on, but they might look at him like, well, you know, we're going to hold you a little bit more, you know, not risk injury. And we don't really know how the quad and the hamstring was injured at the beginning of the year that will respond. So I do think some of those steals can come back. I could see him stealing like 7-8 bases. But I don't think you're doing this, Brett, but I don't want to overstate it either. I don't necessarily see him, you know, being an automatic guy to get to 10, just because they might look at him and be like, well, you've had some problems with your legs before. You know, we're certainly not going to go crazy with this. You offer enough value, you know, or Murphy offers enough value elsewhere that it won't be a big concern. You know, and I think that is the key, you know, how much Baker runs him or doesn't run him.
Yeah. So now let's talk about the two-star tier, since the three-star tier has taken up enough of our time. There are a whole lot of guys in the two-star tier that are just not particularly interesting at all, but will play and could do stat stuff. So, Mike, Devon Travis, is he the second coming of Ryan Sandberg, or is he total garbage?
Well, he's somewhere in the middle, and I think Brett is referencing some comments that I didn't even see today. You know, Travis exceeded his expectations coming into the year, and I think when he plays, you know, you could be looking at a guy who, you know, if he played a full season, could be a particularly in that park, you know, 14, 15 home run guy as a ceiling, you know, maybe five to 10 steals. But the one thing about Travis is I think the average last year was something that I wouldn't expect again. And, you know, we already know he's had difficulty staying healthy. And I don't think he's going to start this year healthy either. So there's some limitations to him. That's why he's here. If everything went right for him, I could see him making it into the three-star tier. But quite honestly, I just don't think he's as talented as some of the other guys, some of the guys that are in that group.
Yeah, we got a lot of comments on Travis on a couple of second baseman pieces at BP today. And I think the general sense among the commenters is that he's a guy who could go 15 home runs, 15 stolen bases with 100 runs. And I just don't see that happening. First of all, let's be realistic about what his power ceiling really is, because he had a 50% ground ball rate last year, and he's a good hitter, and that's part of the reason why he's going to hit for a high average. But of 32 hitters who qualified for a batting title and had a ground ball rate above 50% last year, only 4 of them hit 20 or more home runs, and only 9 had 15 or more. And you're talking guys like Sinshu Chu, Robinson Cano, AJ Pollock, Starling Marte, Ian Desmond, Eric Hosmer. Like, I just don't see it. Unless there's a huge change with his batted ball profile, I don't think you can project, like Mike said, anything more than 10 to 12 home runs. And the only time he's ever really stolen double-digit bases, it's in the lower minors against competition where guys probably wouldn't be able to throw him out. It's very easy to steal bases. So I just have doubts about his ability to steal bags against major league catchers and pitchers. And he's coming off shoulder surgery, so I just don't see the breakout coming. I think a lot of people see that first month or so when he looked like he was going to win the Rookie of the Year, and they think that's who Devin Travis is. But I don't think we're going to see that guy, right, at least not right away to start 2016.
You know who also had an awesome month one time?
Brett Lurie?
Brian Roberts.
Oh.
Well, yeah, although Brian Roberts was, because of the steals, was actually a fantasy force for a while.
No, that's true. But he had that one, like,
oh,
he had
that one,
like, fluke early power surge.
George is too young, so he probably doesn't remember who Brian Roberts is. But, yeah.
He played for the Orioles. Come on.
I remember. There was also a month that he was like going to get traded, and it just rumors were like floating around him forever, and he was supposed to go to the Cubs. I forget what year that was.
He ended up with the Yankees one year.
2007, yeah. Maybe?
I think it was a little later than that.
Yeah, I don't know.
It was a fun walk down Brian Roberts memory lane.
This is true. I am not optimistic about Devon Travis, and while I'd certainly take him over Brian Roberts, I think...
there's a phenomenon that always happens, you know, and I think that last year, you know, people were too low on Travis and completely writing him off from the standpoint that they just thought he couldn't, you know, hold up in the major leagues. And now, you know, the half season of success, I think people are going too far the other way and trying to extrapolate those numbers over a full season. You know, we see this every year, and you know, you kind of have to look at the two, you know, the middle ground there, which is, yes, he's a major leaguer. If he's healthy, he should manage to hold his own in a lineup, but that doesn't necessarily mean that he's going to suddenly, you know, do what he did last year and it's repeatable. I think at a minimum, we have to see him do it for a full season, just based, you know, as you guys mentioned before, in his minor league profile.
Yep.
Yeah. So speaking of guys who, and this could be the new Devon Travis, at least as far as the 2015 version is concerned. Why do you think people are overlooking Corey Spangenberg in San Diego, Mike?
Well, you know, I think for the most part, if you look at his minor league profile, and I think in the annual last year it said this, he looked more like a utility guy and more of a tweener than he did a starter. And, you know, he's put up some pretty good numbers both in the minors and especially last year in the major leagues. And I think people are looking at him and thinking that he can't, you know, it's not sustainable. But what I'm looking at with him is less his ability and more his opportunity. There's just nobody there in San Diego who's going to replace him. And, you know, forgetting even if the home runs don't stay, it's not difficult to see him stealing, you know, 15 bases, putting up a 260 or 270 batting average. That's not great, but, you know, we're at that point now where we're in the two-star tier. And, you know, looking at some of the guys who are here, like Josh Harrison, you know, we mentioned Travis, Logan Forsythe is here, which could be a whole separate conversation. You know, Spangenberg could be that sneaky guy in a deep mixed league who is your second baseman. and you're not that unhappy about, particularly if you drafted stronger elsewhere, you know, on your team.
Didn't he hit like a walk-off home run in his first career at bat? I feel like he did, if I remember correctly.
I don't remember.
Well, there's only one way to find out. But, you know, the thing about him is that, you know, he's one of those guys who's just not, he's not particularly sexy in any way, but, you know, there is the potential to hit for some average, the potential to steal some bases. And it's not like this is someone without a track record. He's played in 128 games and he has a 109 OPS plus. I mean, that's going to tamper down his raw stats a little bit in San Diego, but he's someone who he's not a schlub.
So, no, he's solid. And by the way, I think the walk-off may have come in his second game.
Oh, okay. I remember he had one early on. But we've been talking about speed not only tonight, but we've been talking about it for weeks. And if you're looking to pick up stolen bases and guys with upside, it's guys who can run. And Spangenberg's a guy who definitely can steal double-digit bases. And he's the type of guy you want to look for late in a draft. I think absolutely, Brett, you're on the right track with this call.
Well, and I think some of it, and we'll get to this when we get to the one-star tier, is that it has as much to do with him as it does with the fact when we get to these one-star options. It's, you know, as much as I said second base is thick, and we saw it in the three-star tier, it really drops off in the one-star tier. So if you've missed out on some of those guys above, I think that's where Spangenberg does have some sneaky value.
He's going undrafted in NFBC ADP right now.
Yeah, and that's too much. He probably, you know, if a 15 team mix with a 23 man lineup is 345 slots.
Yeah,
he should be going at least in the high 200s.
He's going 383rd.
Yeah, that's too low. I think even if you don't like him, he should probably be going in the low 300s.
This is what value looks like.
Yeah, we have these discussions all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So. Is there anyone else in this tier you want to talk about before we move on to our favorite game?
Remember 2 years ago when everybody was really high on Josh Harrison and everybody on our staff, you know, warned you that he was a 1 year wonder.
Uh-huh. Babbitt was crazy that year. I think not yeah. Danny Santana crazy, but like crazy.
It was pretty crazy. I think it was like in the 340s or 350s. Yeah, whereas Santana's was close to 400.
I think it was 400.
Yeah,
I think it was.
so let's go to the one star tier. Who started the game last week? Do you guys remember?
No.
It was whoever took Chris Carter.
Not me, Mike.
That was me because you guys were cursing my name.
He was the only That's good true. Player.
Yeah, he was.
Oh, good in quotes, but.
All right, so that means that George, it is your turn to go first this week. So who is your one-star guy?
Oh, I think you know. We published our targets at second base up on Baseball Prospectus on Monday, and my pick was Javier Baez, who's in this tier. And last year, terrible, just right off the whole year, except when he finally started to hit in the minor leagues. He showed some legitimate improvements. Down to Triple A Iowa, hit .324 with a .385 on base, .527 slugging, with 13 home runs in just over 300 plate appearances in the PCL. And those numbers don't sound impressive, but they're considerably higher than the league average offensive rates in the PCL. So even by PCL standards, Baez was just tearing the cover off the ball. And then he looked good in 80 plate appearances with the Cubs in September. I know it's not a ton of plate appearances, and it's not enough to draw anything significant from. But it's worth noting that they were a lot better than his disastrous debut the year before. I think the contact rate is up. It was below 60% his rookie year. It's up around 68% last year with the Cubs. So no matter what, he's a guy who's going to strike out a ton. You just have to overlook that. But I don't think it's as big of an anchor now as it was maybe a decade ago within the batting average department. But I think he's continuing to progress as a hitter. There's still immense raw talent here with this guy, and he could hit 30 home runs. There's legitimate, the talent is there for him to be able to do that. I don't think it's going to happen in 2016, but I think Joe Maddon and that organization, they're going to be creative with how they deploy him, around the field. I think he's going to get some starts in the outfield. He can play second. They have Zobrist who can move around. I think the playing time will be there. It's something that our former colleague Sahadev Sharma wrote about. He gives you just enough in terms of speed that you want to go after the upside, and he's a guy who is going so late right now. In drafts, he's going 276th overall, so that's the 19th round in 15 team leagues. Last year, he was going in like the 8th round, so you're really not paying for any of the upside up front on draft day. And I think he's a good guy to just take a shot on and see what happens.
Yeah, that Baez would have been my guy if I had gone first, but I am a masochist and don't allow myself to go first ever. So, Mike, you go next.
Well, I'll take the guy I took in the article, and I actually don't have high hopes for him, but the tier is weak, and he's going so far back in NFBC, and that's Alan Hansen. He's going at almost the 600th pick overall. And I know there's obviously risk with him. He was unimpressive, to say the least, in AAA, but the Pirates have absolutely no options. And Hansen did steal, I think, 30-plus bases last year. You're basically making a speed play here for your third middle infielder in deeper leagues. If Hansen can steal 20 bases, and even if he can somehow hit like 240 or 250, he's going to provide some value just with where he's being picked. And if he doesn't provide value with where he's being picked, that's a deep, deep reserve pick. It just really doesn't matter if he flops at that point. So that's kind of why he's my pick. It's not because I expect wonderful things out of Alan Hansen this year, but it's because at that slot in the draft, you just have absolutely nothing to lose.
So that leaves me with a small and entirely uninteresting group to choose from. So I am going to do... sometimes I don't like to do the obvious thing, and sometimes, then again, I like to do the obvious thing to keep everyone on their toes. So I'm going to take Jurickson Profar. There is really no place for him to play right now, but you could make that same argument for Javier Baez, and you could make that same argument for Alan Hansen. We don't know yet how Profar will hold up in the field, but he looked pretty good in his first few at bats of the year that he got in the AFL, and heading into this year, I think there is at least a reasonable chance that he could see time at one of the middle infield positions or at designated hitter if Mitch Moreland struggles. So given that eligibility and given his pedigree, I will usually bet on pedigree as a flyer more often than not, just because that's my MO.
He's only 23.
He's going to be really good. I don't think it's going to be during 2016, but if it is, I don't want to miss it.
If he's ever healthy, he will be good. I should point out that in a lot of leagues this year, he will start out as a DH only because he did play 12 games at DH in organized ball last year, and that's all he did.
Well, the other thing about him, I mean, if you subscribe to Baseball Prospectus, you probably were reading it all offseason, but Brett mentioned it. The performance in the AFL, there were nothing but glowing reviews about his bat there. He hit 267, 352 on base, 453 slugging, 9 extra base hits and 91 plate appearances. And that's after missing nearly 2 years.
Oh, yeah, he showed those flashes that everybody like oohs and ahs when he's on.
The talent's still there.
One thing, I mean, there's no doubt about it. If Profar is healthy, you know, we know that he could be an impact player. You know, that's the question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it definitely is.
3 good picks.
I'm proud of us.
We did it, guys.
Yeah. We'll be right back. Back thank you for listening to episode 75 of Flags Fly Forever. We have been a baseball prospectus fantasy podcast. I have been Brett. Mike has been Mike. George has been George. Read us at BP. We have our positional series going on. It's awesome. It's in depth. You will love it. We are also rolling out our top 10s on the prospect side and lots of other interesting content as we roll towards spring training. We will see you next week for third base because we don't go entirely counterclockwise just to screw you up. But we will be back then and enjoy your week. Bye-bye.
See you next week.
Night, everybody.